This is football. I'm Kevin Clark. Lions fans thought their weekend and their lives could not get any better. If you're a Michigan fan, good Lord, this is a good time for you. You thought you'd peaked, and then Monday night, last game of Super Wild Card Weekend, Matt Patricia clowns himself. You guys are rolling. You guys are rolling. I don't want to talk about that specifically. Matt Patricia's always been bad. Promoting him was a panic move. All that stuff. We've done that. Nick Sirianni should be fired. The Eagles have fired far better coaches. They fired Andy Reid. They fired the only coach who's ever delivered them a Super Bowl in Doug Peterson. It's always felt Chip Kelly had one mediocre year, and they fired him. It's always felt like Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman were going to deliver you the roster, or in Chip Kelly's case, you were going to demote Howie Roseman and send the analytics department to the literal marketing wing of the building. That he did that. But then you have to have the results. They give you the roster, they give the infrastructure, you have to win with them. You have to win resoundingly. You can't do whatever the hell this is. And there's some really troubling sort of indicators here about where this is all heading. But the Bucs are the second team since 1990 to have a bottom 10 total offense and defense and still reach divisional round. The other one was the Beastquake Seahawks, if you remember those. And that shouldn't happen for a team this talented. And it also doesn't matter if it's your fault or not. That's the hazard pay of being a coach. If it's on the coordinators, well, you hired them. But also, there's a couple things here. Number one, coaches are supposed to be problem solvers first and foremost. You were presented the clear parameters of a disaster, which is you hired two wrong coordinators. The team was in a tailspin. There was finger pointing everywhere, and you did nothing to stop. This is a talented team that could not get out of its own way, and you didn't help them. And real quick, like, there's a mainstream take that we should be more humane with coaches. I've seen that a couple times, you know, and I completely agree. There's families and all that stuff. But the people who are actually most affected by coach firings, we never talk about, we never discuss. You know, it's analysts, it's guys who get their foot in the door. It's lower level staff. With Nick Sirianni in particular, like, I'm going to go in on him a little bit. There's kind of a that's what the money's for situation here. A little Don Draper. And again, I don't know if he's the number one problem in Philadelphia before I do this, but I do know he's a problem and he's an easy fix. All right. So Troy Aikman says they look like a defeated team. And I feel like being just looking at the team, that was clear. There was a story that came out on ESPN this morning. Normally these stories come out after they're eliminated, and it came out this morning, Monday morning, where they say essentially there was a lot of finger pointing, that there's been a shift in Sirianni's behavior, which I guess they're drawing a line, and not just Tim McManus wrote the story, but like other people in the building or whatever sources are saying that like the Big Dom incident was the igniting factor of Nick Sirianni changing his behavior a little bit. And he became more reserved. He wasn't the same guy. We've seen all of the Sia video in Kansas City where he's yelling at Chiefs fans. We saw the I Love Frank Reich thing a couple of years ago. We've seen him mean mugging to the camera while beating the Giants. That is not what he wants to be right now. But then the bigger problem is not his demeanor. It never has been, because you can get away with whatever if you're winning. It's that Brian Johnson, Jalen Hurts, and Nick Sirianni seem to just not have any idea what they want the identity of the team to be. And I guess the book is Brian Johnson has his own philosophy, quote, within an offensive structure belonging to Sirianni. I don't necessarily know what that means, except it sounds like this story also is basically who knows how much autonomy Brian Johnson even has. But what we know is Jalen Hurts is not passing over the middle of the field. 5% of his pass attempts were between the hashes. lowest rate of any of the starters in the league this year. They're going deep a lot, top 10 in vertical routes, downfield throws, 11% of his throws or Hurts' throws are down the field. So you're doing outside the numbers and you're doing deep. And they have the personnel. Like, we saw this, by the way. Like, the reason they had success tonight when they did was because they were like, okay, Devontae Smith is a lot better than the guy in front of him. We'll just give him the ball. They have a talent advantage. And when that is exploited, they seem to do well. But it seemed like there was a disconnect for the entire second half of the season. Peyton Manning said that Hurts being an empty while the Bucs are sending that much pressure on blitzes was stubborn. The tush push didn't work. That's how you know things have gotten truly bad. The tush push did not work. That is like the comics where Superman dies. That's not supposed to happen. And now we have, here are the numbers. First 9 games for Nick Sirianni, 3-6. Next 40 games, 32-8. Includes a Super Bowl appearance, almost won it. Last 7 games, 1-6. And they're out. I put on Twitter a question, which was, is there a bigger collapse in season that cannot be attributed to quarterback injury? You know, you lose half your guys. Like, is there a bigger inexplicable collapse? I understand AJ Brown didn't play today, but a team that just stopped playing well. I think the best analogy is probably, if you remember, the 2019 Patriots, historic defense. I went to a Cowboys-Patriots game that year, and I remember just talking to those guys. They had those guys that everybody seeing ghosts. Bill Belichick, Tom Brady was still on the team, and then they just limped into the playoffs. Tom Brady was done at that point. Saw it as hopeless. They didn't have receiver talent that was required, and off they went. The defense stopped being historic, and everything fell apart. That's the better analogy to me, because the 2020 Steelers, which is thrown around there, they were always frauds. And some people were throwing in teams from the 80s or whatever, and then the Plaxico incident Giants, which is, again, I think that's a ignition point where you're talking about just like something happened there. Like, you can't, that's not inexplicable. We know what happened there. Okay. So the 2020 Steelers, the difference there is like the Eagles were not, the Steelers were fraudulent and the Eagles turned out to be fraudulent, but the difference is the Eagles should not have been frauds. They had the talent to be a 14-win team, 15-win team that made the Super Bowl. They had that kind of talent. They were on the level at some point this season with the Niners. We found out they were on the level with the Cowboys, but that turned out to be the C-list. But I guess the question now is, what do they do? Because I don't think Sirianni can survive this. Because again, Roseman gives you the roster. The roster is good. The expectations come with that. The other problem is, even if you like Nick Sirianni, the options to upgrade are so much better. Let me ask you a question. If you're a Nick Sirianni defender, if you're yelling at your podcast app and you're saying you're an idiot, they went to the Super Bowl last year, what would Nick Sirianni have done with the Tennessee Titans over the past 6 years with Ryan Tannehill? Would he have won as many games as Mike Vrabel? Just throwing it out there. Would he have won as many games as Mike Vrabel did? Coach of the year, one seed, all the things that he did. Would he have won that many? He is not the best coach of all time. I will give him some grace and say that the last 2 years he's been better than Bill Belichick at coaching. But I'm looking around and I'm seeing Vrabel, Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick, Jim Harbaugh available. I would make all of those guys say no before even thinking about retaining Nick Sirianni, even starting the discussions that would lead to a bunch of wholesale changes that would lead to Sirianni returning and coaching the team in OTAs. And there's probably other guys. I mean, I would call Ben Johnson. Just make sure. I'm just talking about proven head coaches who have won in the league. Like, that's the top of my list. I would also probably pick Ben Johnson over him. I'd pick probably pick Mike McDonald, but I know they really like offensive head coaches, partly because you have to hire an offensive head coach to be manning one side of the ball, and then you could lose him easily and he becomes a revolving door. So I understand why they like offensive head coaches. But if you're going to fire Andy Reid, you're definitely going to be able to fire Nick Sirianni. That's not going to be an issue. But I want to throw this out there. Is this a better job than the Cowboys? Because that's who you're going to be competing with at the top of the coaching market. Because every other roster, like the Chargers are a good example of a team that I think on its face is ready to win now. But then you look at the roster and you go, oh, they're going to be in for a brutal stretch because of the cap, because of how old the roster is. If you're looking for teams that can legitimately win now, and again, I'm assuming Sirianni's gone. If you're looking at that, then there's only two teams where you can plug and play and say, this team can win a Super Bowl next year. It's the Eagles and it's the Cowboys. Do you want to be coaching a roster that's being meddled in by Jerry Jones or Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie? That's the discussion in all of this. I think the answer is the Cowboys for a couple of reasons. Number one, there are so many remaining questions about Philadelphia. They got a bunch of guys who are free agents, but more importantly, Jason Kelce, his future, he was in tears on the sideline. It looked like he was in tears in the tunnel. Didn't look like a guy who was ready to run it back necessarily. And he's one of the best players in the league still. That changes everything they do. We've had this, like Mitchell Schwartz came on, had one of the best segments we've had this year where he talked about how if you're doing Jenga pieces and saying, oh, you cannot remove this guy, Jason Kelce is at the literal top of the list. The literal top of the list, because so much that they do in short yardage is just Jason Kelce getting low and just moving guys away. And that is not going to be easy to find. The centers like that, Hall of Fame centers, are impossible. You hold on to them as long as you can. And so there was a retirement buzz about him last year. He obviously has a very successful media situation, great family life, can do just the podcast with Travis and I mean, make a whole hell of a lot of money and not put his body through that. We talk about the how much it would hurt to run the tush push as a quarterback. You got to remember, Kelce's 37, something like that, and he's doing that every single time. That's neck stuff. That's back stuff. That's knee stuff. That is brutal. That is not a play that you're thinking about in May. You're going to go, oh, I can't wait for that. I cannot wait for to run the tush push. I can't wait to dive into Vita Vea. That's not what you're trying to do. And so I think it's the Cowboys because and I'm wondering now, as much as I love Howie Roseman, a lot of their talent is expensive. A lot of older and will get expensive or is currently expensive. Is the young talent that have plugged the holes over the past couple of years as or expected to plug the holes as talented as we thought? Don't know. And I literally don't know. Like these guys can develop. That's what the coaching is for. But maybe in 2 years, this roster will not be what we think. Now, no one does a better job of plugging holes with one-year deals, getting draft busts who everybody said couldn't play, get him on a one-year deal. He knocks out of the park, then he either leaves or he signs a three-year extension. Nobody finds value quite like Howie Roseman. So I'm always going to bet on that. But I'm looking at this Cowboys team, and I'm seeing a roster that there's a reason I picked them to make the Super Bowl this year, because at some point the talent wins out. And right now, Dak Prescott over this season really a much better quarterback than Jalen Hurts, and he has a longer track record. Jalen Hurts last year was worlds better. Obviously, Dak couldn't stop turning the ball over. They both look terrible this weekend, so it's not much of a competition. But if I'm, let's say that you have your choice, and I think the only person who would actually have their choice of the jobs would be Bill Belichick. I think as long as ownership wanted to work with them. And didn't want to. And by the way, like I'm calling for Bill Belichick to not be an evaluator and just coach the team, because every single time we say he's the best coach of all time, the one thing we don't say is what a great GM he was, because Coach Bill solved the problems of GM Bill. And he could go to a place that that problem is solved for him. We talk so much about, we clown the Cowboys, but guess what they're really good at? Talent acquisition. Why are the Lions always good? Why do they have pass rushers? They disappeared yesterday, but they generally still have the skill there. Dak Prescott is a good quarterback. He's a hell of a lot better than what Belichick's assembled in New England since Tom Brady left. The roster's bad. There's a reason the best coach of all time was just fired. So just go and coach ball, man. Don't interfere with the draft stuff. And like, there's all sorts of stories about him interfering with the scouting process and saying, no, do this, do this, do this. Like, it hasn't, the last, let's say, decade, he has not covered himself in glory as a GM, Bill Belichick. And so I just want him to go coach ball and be the best coach in the history of the world and just scheme this stuff up and MacGyver his way to a Super Bowl. That's all I want. So I think that the Cowboys and the Eagles are actually the best fit. Don't go to Atlanta and clean house. It's going to break my football heart if what he does is say, I'm over 70, I'm going to go to Atlanta, I'm going to install the Patriot way. I would hate that. It's not going to work. The roster is not close enough. And by the time he does anything, if he can do anything, because again, he's doing the GM stuff, which has not worked for a while. If that, at some point, you just age out of it. If you're starting an entirely new project, an entirely new Patriots, you're hiring all your guys, all your buddies are coming on down. Again, he's earned the right to do that. He's earned the money to do that. He's going to get all the leeway he wants. But I don't think he should do it. I think he should go to one of these two teams, whichever roster he likes better, whichever infrastructure he feels more comfortable with, and say, okay, cool, guess what you're going to have? The best damn game plan for 17 games next season. And hopefully three more. And I think there's a real opportunity. But for me, that and I know that Bill Parcells thing, like, for me, that's the Cowboys. And now you start looking around and you say, man, if I'm the Giants, am I at least making some calls? Because the coaching market is wild right now. And if you're standing pat, like we do this all the time with quarterbacks, how many quarterbacks would you keep over CJ Stroud, all that stuff, right? If you do that with coaches, there's really no reason you can't pursue any available coach all the time. Just make the call, find out. How many coaches are really so good that an owner should literally stand pat? Literally, it's for me right now. Obviously, Dan Campbell, John Harbaugh, Matt LaFleur, anybody who just got hired, Rob Mayo, obviously, we're not going to do that. Mike McCarthy. Mike McDaniel, I would not actively try to replace. Sean McDermott, I would not. Sean McVay, I would not. Kevin O'Connell, I would not. Kevin O'Connell's a good coach. Sean Payton, I would not. Andy Reid, I would not. DeMeco Ryans, I would not. Kyle Shanahan. Don't keep Stefanski around. Don't know what you do with Zach Taylor. I'll let that one hang for a bit. Anybody else should be calling Jim Harbaugh and say, hey, man, just checking things out. Just seeing if you wanted to be a lifelong dream of having a Giants NY on your chest. I'm just checking in. That's the kind of thing that the coaching market is getting so good that you pursue that. But that's also the reason the Nick Sirianni's fate seems sealed to me. Someone asked me tonight, a listener question. They said, how much does coaching matter? Or does coaching even matter? Because it seems like it kind of reverses itself from one year to the next. And the genius one year has one bad year and then they get fired and they never recover it. And I understand what that is. But I think what is actually the case is there's only five or six really special coaches. And then there's a bunch of competent guys. And then there's just the guys who just don't really know what they're doing. I think there's actually very few coaches who straight up are incapable of winning a football game. Like, if they coach for a million years, would never win 13 games, right? I think there's a handful of those guys. Like, I'll give you a great example. I think he's a great college coach. But, like, the jokes around the league when Greg Schiano was in Tampa Bay and he was running an offense. I think Michael Silver had the story. But basically, that the schemes there, and obviously he wasn't the offensive play caller, but they were running schemes that were like so basic that the defense was just laughing. And I don't think that there was I don't think there was a program there that if given a million years, Greg Schiano was going to improve significantly. I think there's very few of those guys, and it's usually guys who don't really have much NFL experience. But I think that the thing we make the mistake on is what culture is, how to implement culture, and what kind of sort of what a coach is supposed to do. And what I mean by that is, like, we look at the play calls and we say, all right, that's coaching. All right, did two receivers run to the same spot? That stuff is the easiest stuff to fix. That's really easy to fix. The harder stuff is, like, the thing we talk about the Eagles and, like, they're missing tackles. To me, that's how you practice. To me, that's how you schedule out your season. To me, that's you know, and by the way, like, I'm about to say toughness, and I'm going to revert back on that, because toughness to me is, like, Chuck Knoll said this, and I think about it a lot. There's no such thing as toughness. There's only technique and fundamentals. Do you know what to do over and over and over and over again? Because that's what toughness is. These players are, very few players are actually legitimately soft. Many of them are just bad, and they don't know their arm tackling, and they don't know how, you know, and the same thing with offensive linemen, right? If somebody's blowing past you, it's not because you're scared of the guy. It's because you don't know what you're doing. So there's no toughness, only technique and fundamentals. Fatigue, same thing, conditioning. But all of that stems from the guy who runs the program telling you what to do, how to implement hitting, when do you use pads? Like, that's the kind of stuff that we probably overlook in these things. And then we go, oh, he's a genius play caller. Well, what does he have to show for it? Because somebody was telling me about a coach recently. Awesome coordinator. Terrible head coach. And I said, what's that about? And they said, well, he doesn't know how to run a practice. He doesn't know when to have the guys hit. He doesn't know how to do the install thing. And so he was cooking when somebody else was designing up the off-season program and all of this stuff, and figured out when to put the gas, you know, press the gas to the floor, when to not do it. And this guy was clueless. All he had was a playbook. And I think about that a lot, as far as, like, so many things are vibes based in the off-season and during the season. And, like, I remember hearing a story. I wasn't there that day, but somebody told me, I was at a Patriots training camp, and the day before, I think, like, Tom Brady didn't come out for a period, or maybe even the full day. And it was because and didn't tell anybody. Belichick told him to do this, that he wanted the team to practice without Tom Brady, to see what that was like. Situational, simulated type of stuff. And it's like, that's the kind of thing that's going to matter on November 3rd when he goes out with a rolled ankle for a couple of plays. That's the kind of thing. And that's what we overlook a lot of times, because we're looking at playbooks and all this stuff. By the way, the Greg Schiano thing went far further than just the playbook. It was just wasn't going to work. But I think a lot of times when we say, where does head coaching matter? It's that. Nick Sirianni was looking at a team, was in the middle of a tailspin, and couldn't do anything about it. And at some point, that's who you are. And by the way, I mentioned the 2019 Patriots. Like, that didn't get any better after that. They lost Tom Brady, and it didn't get any better after that. Sometimes tailspins last longer than half a season. By the way, 5 of the 6 wildcard games decided by 2 touchdowns or more. Most in a round since the 1982 wildcard round. I will say, it's funny, because you could probably try to say, oh, well, it's because, you know, these teams are not close together. Blowouts, not a lot of good teams this year. Except, I will remind you, the Dallas Cowboys lost to the 7 seed for the first time ever. A 7 seed won because the Green Bay Packers got hot. And boy, you want to talk about parity. The Dallas Cowboys being bad brings that to the masses. So there you go.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? 2 words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and up must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050. Or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's do Bills Steelers quickly. Let's spend a little time on it. So, first of all, Josh Allen getting rid of the ball quickly again. 2.5 seconds to throw, fourth quickest in the game in his career. So we saw with the James Cook game a couple weeks ago. When it's a mixture of quick game stuff plus absolute chaos in which he thrives, that's when Josh Allen is at his best. The over and over again, patting the ball, seeing what's downfield, that to me can go south very quickly. Now it's produced some of his greatest ever plays, but that there's got to be a bunch of quick game stuff baked in. On his quick passes tonight, he completed 14 of 17 for 85 yards, 2 touchdowns. Nearly 50% success rate on those. He was cooking. He is, and we saw that with the kind of the open field run. He is as talented a player as we've seen, capable. And I don't want to do a huge tribute to him because I've done it a million times, but like capable of things we've never seen in a football field before. And I think that's the best thing. There's only probably 6 or 7 of these guys at the quarterback position over the past decade who literally every time he takes a snap, you might see the most interesting thing you've ever seen on the football field. And by the way, that's been good or bad his entire career. Remember the Texans playoff game a few years ago, where just the wildest crap you've ever seen in your entire life. That's possible, but he has gotten that out of his game, and the Bills have done a great job of building something around where he doesn't have to do that. For the millionth time, I'll tell you, Brandon Bean told me that he thinks that Josh makes mistakes when he's trying to do too much. But on the other hand, like Josh likes to do too much. And so that's me talking, but like that's it. You can see why he does it. Again, I've said it a million times. You try being boring. If I were to throw any cold water on this whole thing, the Bills' defensive injuries, I mean, it's not the same because it's not the same level. But like, by the way, they already lost Matt Milano at the beginning of the season. We're getting to almost like Dolphins level depletion on the defensive side of the ball. which is why I would want to pick the Chiefs. Even though the Chiefs have real flaws, the Chiefs are healthier in this specific instance. You think about, so Daquan Jones comes back, Rasul Douglas is out, Tyrell Dodson is out, Taylor Rapp all hurt in week 18, missed start of the playoffs. Monday, Bernard, Baylen Spector, and Christian Benford all exited. Teron Johnson had a head injury. I don't know what the status of that is. But that's, at some point you just lose guys. And at some point, you know, AJ Klein signing him off the street, awesome. AJ Klein's dad used to email me at the Wall Street Journal to tell me how great, I think it was Ron Rivera. And Ron Rivera was his coach. He just tell me, he send me emails being like, Ron Rivera is the best. I liked your piece today on Ron Rivera. A couple times. Very nice family. But he's coming off the street. I think, wasn't he, he's going to like the Keys. He said he was going to the Keys or something. He's renting an RV. And now all of a sudden he's playing in the playoffs. And at some point that becomes unsustainable. So that's that. On the Sewer side of the ball, I thought it would be a bigger margin than it ended up being. Congratulations to Steelers for fighting on that. They probably could have made it much closer if it wasn't for some weird calls. But the story of this and the talk radio angle coming out of this is going to be Mike Tomlin's reaction to, I believe, Brooke Pryor's question, saying you have 1 year left in your contract. And the implication was she was about to ask about his future, because there's been all those reports, including by Mike Florio. I think Jay Glazer had one. That, okay, well, he's going to think about his future, which, you know, aren't we all? And I don't think, I got to be honest with you, I did not read much into that. If he's going into the last year of his contract, if he's negotiating, that's a great negotiating tactic. Just get up and leave. Just get up and leave. I don't think talking about that was going to help. And so I think that's a lot of people being like, oh, he's gone. He's gone, gone. He doesn't even want to talk about it. No, it's a negotiation. That's what this is. And so I think he loves being the Pittsburgh Steelers coach. I think that, and by the way, you talk about coaching market. Like, there's a guy who 15 teams you call. And there's a handful of those guys. But I'd call him before Vrabel. But anyway, I'm not going to glean too much from that. Don't, you know what? What does Mike Tomlin tell us all the time? Don't overreact to something. Don't overreact to something. Not to quote Bill Parcells, but like, you know what? Let's stick with Tomlin here for a second. I don't think you should glean anything from anything Mike Tomlin has ever said at press conferences. He's trying to talk to his team. He's trying to talk to specific people. He is not trying to talk to the media. So maybe he's trying to talk to ownership, to Omar Khan, whomever. He does not want to put on a show for the media. We've seen that time and time again. And so I don't think that that's – I didn't read anything about his future into that, except that he clearly – negotiations are currently not going well. But how many times have we seen situations that turn on a dime? Very quickly. And all it takes is one call and all of that gets resolved. This is – on the grand scale of Pittsburgh Steelers' potential problems, I'm much more worried about who's playing quarterback in week one next year than who's coaching. By the way, some people asked me about this. I really am starting to talk myself into Russell Wilson there. Sorry. Who's better? Who's better they're going to get? Who's better? Everybody, we're all, as I said last night, people are fantasizing about Dak Prescott becoming available. How? Why? This year? How? Why? Answer that before we start turning your nose at thumbing your nose at Russell Wilson in Pittsburgh. He's not as bad as you guys think. All right, Flynn, we have two questions.
We're going to start with Adam, who wants to know, what do you think the Falcons asked Bill during the interview?
Yeah, so Bill Belichick interviewed, conflicting reports on where this interview was. I saw someone say it was on a yacht. I've not gotten a confirmation on that. Bill was interviewing them. My guess is Arthur Blank, you know, Home Depot founder, all that stuff. They probably talked about, if there were any questions, it was kind of probably overall philosophy, all that stuff. But Bill, especially with the Cowboys losing yesterday, Bill's going to have his pick. Again, it goes back to what I was saying. What does Bill want to do? Because if he wants to run the franchise and, you know, have the skeleton key of every room in the building and sort of understand that everything will be made in his image, then sure, go there. But if you want to just coach ball, there's a lot better options, I think. And so I don't know what he's looking for, but I know that he was probably sounding them out to say, what can you do for me? And I actually think that the best way that this is going to go is when he meets with a team who will tell them what they're going to do for him. And I don't know if Atlanta can do that right now. I think it's a team with a better roster who can say, Bill, you will never have to be in a draft room again. We'll have Nike the dog set up at your laptop. You're good. You're going to tell us what you want. And philosophically, we're going to do the scouting for you. You, sir, are going to coach ball.
Up next, we have Kevin, who wants to know if we're in the middle of a Bucks NFC South dynasty.
So this is a very funny question because it's not like it's always like the Russillo joke. Anytime anybody wins a championship, you say, you know, it's questions got to be asked. Best ever. But this is so narrow because it's the NFC South. So let's break this down here. This is not as dumb a question as maybe you reflexively think, because the Panthers have removed themselves from competition. They are not a functioning NFL team. When Dan Orlovsky was on, didn't Orlovsky say like 2026 or something for Bryce Young or 2025? It's going to be a couple of years until they're a functioning NFL franchise. Even if they make both the exact right hires here, there's only so much you can do in the offseason. They can get closer and they can protect Bryce Young and all this stuff, but they're not going to start winning games anytime soon. The Falcons, let's see. I actually think they'd take a step back if they hired Belichick next year. Like, I'm not step back, but like 7 wins seems right if they hired Belichick, just because giving him personnel power, what's he trying to do here? Like, it's not a win now roster because there's no quarterback. And what have we seen when Bill Belichick is a bad quarterback? I've not seen a lot of good things. You can go in the distant past and talk about Matt Cassel, talk about when Jacoby Brissett came in for Jim Garoppolo, talk about Jimmy Garoppolo himself. We've seen him scheme up some stuff. I thought the the Cam Newton thing was absolutely going to work a couple years ago, and for a while it did, and then it fell apart. His ability to scheme up bad quarterbacks, I think, and this is a reflection of the offensive staff, obviously, but he is still one of the best football minds of all time, that has taken a hit over the past couple of years. So how the Falcons do this, I don't see a lot. I don't see more than 9 wins. So the Saints are the only one there. They're going to keep Dennis Allen. Are they going to keep Jameis Winston after he went rogue in week 18? I'm not really sure. I would not, just because I just, as much as I found that whole thing funny and delightful, once a player turns play calling into a democracy, that is not a good reflection on the head coach. So I actually would have gotten rid of basically everybody involved there. It sounds like they're going to keep Dennis Allen for another year. They haven't made a move yet. Although, again, they should be on the list of teams just checking in, Mike Vrabel, just making sure you're good, buddy. You all set? So I don't think the Bucks. It's not like they'll re-sign Baker Mayfield. They give him a bunch of money. It's not like they've got some uber talented roster that's super young and they're just going to, they're not the next Packers. They're not the next Packers, but I could see two more wins here in a row for the division, just because I just don't know what any of these teams are doing down there. I just don't know. And that when the Panthers being where they are, it's such an advantage for the other teams in the division. I would try to go all in if I was a team in that division, whether it's the Saints or the Falcons and the Bucks that can't really do that. But so, by the way, the Bucks were paying the bills from the Brady year cap wise anyway. So this is impressive. They were even good. So it's only going to get better from here. And Jason Light's really good. But this is a winnable division until further notice. And because of that, the team with the most competence wins. And right now, the way Dennis Allen's coaching, that's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we'll see if Belichick changes that. All right, we'll be back on Wednesday with an excellent guest or two. Had a late scratch tonight that we're going to figure out, but we have an amazing former player turned media member coming to you on Wednesday at the very least. Hopefully we get somebody else as well. But I'm not sweating it because we're going with house money because it's going to be great. This has been Football. Thank you to Flynn. Thank you to Miles. I will see you on Wednesday.